Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Sunday show on Dear Blue Monsters. I'm Gwen Berry in South Florida. Today with me is host Wayne Johnson, and we're going to bring you some recap of today, where history was made, an organized event filled the streets of New York and London and Melbourne and Paris, and over 2,900 events in 166 countries for the People Climate Change March happened. You got to give kudos to Amy Goodman because she broadcasted at Columbus Circle for over 3 hours today, capturing the heart of the event. It began with an indigenous ceremony of cleansing and sanctity in Central Park. White sage, sweetgrass mist for y'all. The indigenous communities led the New York parade with the River Keepers and Bobby Kennedy Jr. In New Delhi, Kathmandu, Rio de Janeiro, people filled the streets to let their 1% and their minions, the politicians, know that it's time to change the global agenda, that saving life, all life. And 350.org, Bill McGibbon led the pathway. He's the big hand here. Women from the Amazon region asked people to know that there are over 287 chemical signatures in the umbilical cords of newborns today. And we're mutating daily with the signatures of Chernobyl and Fukushima. Bolivians asked us to pay attention to the water contamination and mining resource crimes against the Earth Mother. Congress members from a few states and national seats and state seats joined in the march, and there were very few, but they were there along with Al Gore and 20 New York City commissioners who joined the march. Our old friends from Here Be Monsters, Julia Trigg Crawford from Texas and Sharif Hoytland from Louisiana, strode through with Sting and his wife. 2 minutes of silence was held for the energy and effort to hold the world's attention. A culture strike, a forced migration, was highlighted by the National Women's Domestic Alliance, who suffer from chemical exposure, let's face it. And they brought to awareness the migration status of so many South and Central Americans who are forced to leave their homes because it will no longer sustain them due to harsh climate changes with weather disasters and the illegal or legal resourcing and privatization of water. Pardon me. It's happening. That privatization of water, and it's going to happen here in the United States and the European Union soon. The ex-president of Free Ireland, Mary Robinson, marched as part of the UN Global Summit tomorrow. And the first line of marchers was Ban Ki-moon, the head of the UN. Senator Bernie Sanders came with a solution. Get the money out of politics. The National Wildlife Foundation marched. There was a huge contingency of union and labor represented. And in that group, A Bear from Pinko the Bear Show and P.E. Nolan, our Tricia Poole, represented. And, of course, Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Wall Street Sandy swelled that march. Spirit Therapist Nicole Tomasini and Daughters of Isis partner Asa Hoffman marched. A photo essay of the day is going to be posted over at Roundtree 7 by photographer Patty Gray. So far, there's been no brutality from the New York Police Department. Climate justice represents justice and equality on all levels now. That's the big thing. The zealous resourcing by the 1% carried out through the corrupt models of economy and leaderless politicians will be nullified when climate justice prevails. And how do we get there? Knowledge to the social consciousness. Wake up, people. That's the message. Wayne's with me today. We're going to discuss this, and we'll take your call. I just want to play one little piece from yesterday's meeting at the Presbytery with Bill McGibbon and Christopher Hedges and Naomi Klein. This is Naomi Klein. I hope it's going to play right here.
Our next speaker is Naomi Klein.
Hey, everybody. How are you feeling? Not depressed? He's depressed. All right. Let me read you something that I hope will cure you all. This is one of my favorite quotes in the book. It's from Mia Yoshitani, who is an incredible climate justice activist in the Bay Area in Oakland. She's the executive director of the Asian Pacific Environmental Network. And I love this quote because it just really summarizes, I think, the way forward. So, the climate justice fight here in the U.S. and around the world is not just a fight against the biggest ecological crisis of all time. It is a fight for a new economy, a new energy system, a new democracy, a new relationship to the planet and to each other, for land, water, and food sovereignty, for indigenous rights, for human rights, and dignity for all. When climate justice wins, we win the world we want. We can't sit this one out, not because we have too much to lose, but because we have too much to gain. We are bound together in this battle, not just for a reduction in the parts per million of CO2, but to transform our economies and rebuild a world that we want today. So.
I think that says it pretty well, don't you, Wayne?
Very good. Very good. Yes, indeed.
So. You did, I know you were watching too. Did you see that it was over 310,000 people on the official count?
That was the amazing part. I was watching the PBS News, and they were stating that there's 300 plus thousand. They said basically it was just a sea of people. It was just there was no end to it. Those looking down the streets as they were marching down. Plus two, the segments, the demographics of those marching were the whole spectrum of our society, from educators, teachers, high school students, women, children. There was religious groups, all of these saying, you know, it just wasn't a band of hippies being nuts. It was the true snapshot of our society saying, it's time to get serious about this. Throw out the nihilistic bullcrap arguments that's put up by the hydrocarbon industry, and let's get down to some serious solving this problem before it's too late. That's what I really liked about what we saw today.
There was a lot of reaching. There was a lot of cooperation. There were a
Absolutely.
Lot of cooperation. There was a lot of cooperation out there on that street between, and I have to mention this again, the city officials made the streets workable for everybody. That was a really big thing.
Yeah.
The New York City Police Department was not brutalizing the crowd, which now becomes the odd thing to happen, sorry to say. When the police are not brutalizing protesters or marchers, you got a winner, you know? That's the kind of cooperation we need on so many levels in this country. And the biggest part about it is that the one thing that shocks me is I went and I looked for the trending on social networks.
Right.
Of course, Twitter Twitter was glutted with it. You couldn't see anything but the climate march mentioned on Twitter. But on when I Googled all the major news sources, NBC had put out like about a half a minute blurb on it. But you said you saw it and nothing else. ABC also did a little blurb, but it was just online stuff. You said you saw something on PBS. What did you see?
Yes, PBS had a very good segment on it where, you know, PBS will take, they'll do the little highlight segment of it or the little highlight blurb, but then as the show progresses, then they return back, and then they'll dedicate some real significant time, 10, 15 minutes to the subject, and talk about it more in depth. That's why I like the BBC and the PBS. That's more their standards of what they do instead of what you see on like regular news, things like that. One of the things I came across too, Gwen, was recently here, the White House science advisor, John Holden, reported to Congress, the Republicans in the hydrocarbon industry is having another hearing on global climate change and the president's proposed policies to start addressing it. And, of course, you had those paid shills to bring up the same old divertive arguments, nihilistic arguments, just things that aren't factual or, you know, whatever they can do to, you know, say, oh, there's something shiny over here, look over here, to so you don't see the real subjects of what they're trying to do. And, of course, you know, the Cletuses and the, you know, the homeboys or whatever, you know, they can be easily distracted. But this John Holden, the science advisor from the White House, he nailed them to the door. And I have a little clip here on that that I'll kind of pass on.
What's
that? Holden is a theoretical physicist. And he had to appear before the Republican-led House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology this last Wednesday to testify about Obama's administration plan to fight climate change. But as it's true to all House Science Committee hearings on climate change, much of the questioning focused not on the content of the plan, but whether global warming was even real. And that's what they keep wanting to go back to. That's what the opposition keeps wanting to hammer. Global warming's not real. It's, you know, things like that. You know, there was, you know, lines of questioning of whether carbon dioxide actually harms human life or whether the climate plan would just lower global temperature on its own with questions, things like this. One congressman even accused Holden of breaking, of saying that if he really told the truth, then his job would end, you know, because there is no global warming. If he's there self-promoting the global warming, it keeps him getting a paycheck. It's that kind of stuff. Representative Stockman, a Republican out of Texas, we know he's owned by the oil industry. Of course, he opened it up and started about global warming, but he first started off with expressing his distaste of Obama, and it's all Obama's fault. It's a government conspiracy portrayed by Obama and all this government conspiracy kind of crap. He said that he asked a NASA scientist in Maryland, which would probably be Goddard, which is just right outside the Beltway there, what ended the last ice age? Scientists credit global wobbling for the Earth's tilt that, warms and cools the planet. And, isn't what we're seeing here is just nothing more than the typical sinusoidal waveform, which is pretty constant, the heating and the cooling because of the Earth's wobbling and getting closer or farther away from the sun. Go ahead, Gwen.
Well, you know, this last week we took quite a battering on our magnetosphere from solar energy. There was a lot of flare activity in the last couple of weeks, and it was banging on the magnetosphere. Was some concern. There was satellite disruption, and you could tell if you have cable television, you could tell it was a bad day at the Black Ranch, you know.
I'm glad you brought that up because solar flares are really just a burst of radiation. That's what's being emitted.
Yeah.
And radiation will scramble electronics and even your electrical grid, but it has nothing to do with warming the climate. I've had these debates with those who, you know, read, you know, all the right-wing nihilistic stuff and present it to me as if they're well-informed. And I've heard that. Well, what about these global solar flares here and stuff, you know, and making the Van Allen Belt and the Northern Lights dance out much more? Well, okay, yeah, and your point is what? What's that got to do with warming the climate? Absolutely nothing.
Well, no. Right. It has nothing to do with global warming, but it has a lot to do with influencing, I think, the collective emotional body. That's me. That's
well,
who I am. That's how I walk. I think
no,
it does affect.
Go ahead.
It was like walking through molasses in the last week. You know?
Yeah, well, I can see that.
It was like, holy crap, what else? Bang, bang, gotcha.
Well, you know, electromagnetic fields can scramble the brain to an extent. That was even one of Tesla's experiments about, you know, a possible military weapon of bouncing electromagnetic signal off the ionosphere to whoever you want to scramble and basically make everybody discombobulated. Thing is, to do that on a human level, you're talking about some pretty high strength of a signal to do that. Solar flares. Go ahead. What?
I do think that human sensuality is going through a transformation these days. I really do. I think our senses are being tweaked, and we are sensitive to much more than we once were. And part of it is all of the collective effects of what's going on at this time. So that's how I'm presenting it, directness.
Sure.
There.
Sure. Well, just like where you read earlier, where there, you know, the environmental, the chemicals that we're finding even in umbilical cords and things like this. You know, our immune system is so busy fighting this other stuff that another little thing added on top of it, you know, maybe just be the straw that kind of starts breaking the camel's back. I can concede to what you're saying there. Yes. Yeah.
And I do think, that the question of climate justice has everything to do with the insanity of the nuclear industry right now, too.
I'm going to say, you know, there's those who say, no, I'll build more nuclear plants. Well, you know, okay, fine, because I work in the industry of electrical transmission lines, and, you know, of course, the generation all goes hand in hand with that. But, you know, you're getting down to, okay, yeah, you have all these nuclear energy, but what do you do with the radioactive waste, the radioactive cooling water that you have? They're putting it in 55-gallon drums and storing it in old salt mines in Utah and stuff like that. Well, that's what you're talking about, a short-term cure. The radioactive life of this water is, 1,000 times greater than what the life of that barrel that's holding it going to stay. So, you know, basically, we've seen, buried chemicals in drums and stuff like that. Eventually, the drums rust out, and whichever inside trying to contain it gets into the water aquifer. Love Canal being a perfect example of that, only now we're going to be talking about radioactive water.
Do you know who Dr. Helen Caldicourt is?
I can't say it's a hand right off hand.
She's worked with the UN on, global radiation levels and that kind of thing. She was once part of the nuclear industry as a watcher, and she got so radical they, flipped her off real fast. Dr. Caldicourt has been addressing through the United Nations and several other organizations on a global basis for the last 20, 30 years. And she just put out a report with a couple of other doctors who are there with her in Cambridge, and she's beyond worried and frustrated. She's resigned almost, and you hear a lot of resignation from people who are still trying to be activists, which is hard, you know, to go against that kind of negativity. Oh, there's no sense in it now kind of thing. But Dr. Caldecott is almost resigned these days because she's the level of radiation that are hitting the west coast of our country to the, you know, even the signatures, the old signatures of Chernobyl and what they've done to, like, the almond trees in Turkey is just incredible. And the nuclear industry owns so much of the media. And it's like TEPCO. TEPCO is GE. GE, what is GE? GE is several large conglomerates of media, too. I mean, can you say
CBS,
MSNBC, Comcast? This is all managed information. It's beyond me that someone like Caroline Kennedy is being risked by this White House as the diplomat, as the ambassador to Japan right now, living in Tokyo. I think it's incredibly irresponsible of this administration to do that. But I think it's incredibly irresponsible of global leadership, which is an oxymoron. It doesn't make any sense. There is no global leadership anymore, driven by, you know, corporations anymore. But my goodness, the very real nature of what is happening on a daily basis at Fukushima is just as frightening as it gets. It really is.
Well, that's when you hear those who are proponents for nuclear energy, you know, it's safe and it's all this, and I'll quickly point out there's plenty of dead zones still left around Chernobyl and Fukushima with health hazards that people cannot or should be returning to those areas. And, oh, yeah, but they were different, you know, that would never happen in this country. And I said, are you old enough to remember what down here happened at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania, right next to Philadelphia, Baltimore, and, you know, those metropolitan areas of congested? Only but for the grace of God did it not happen.
Fukushima, all of that water flooded that topsoil in that area with radiated water. They scooped it up, put it into bags. They put it into plastic, into heavy-duty plastic bags, and made a mountain. They made a mountain of it. They made a mountain of it outside of Fukushima. And now it's deteriorated so bad that it's being blown all over Japan, the dust of it. You understand. You know. You're an engineer. The decomposition.
Absolutely.
And this is being blown, and it's being blown into the trade winds. And this is where one of the things that Dr. Caldecott has brought up, the trade, you know, the wind, the sea, all of it, that it's not contained. They have buildings that are open with hot rods that they're feeding freaking water, seawater, and flushing out to sea daily. Hundreds of thousands, millions of gallons, and the signature of it from the satellite is frightening to look at. And nobody on this planet, no leadership, is saying we have to do something. This is madness. This is the one thing that makes me stop the MLK walk and just sit back and go, you know what? I can't say anything to my friends across the street with the pitchforks and hammer handles that want to bring the government down, because the governments are so corrupt and so rotten that this would be allowed to go on. It leaves you in a state of, you get apathetic for a while and you go, oh my goodness. Do you follow where I'm going?
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is to continue on with the thought of lack of leadership, government leadership, everyday citizen, everyday proletariats, the common man in California, Northern California in particular, are buying their own Geiger counters to measure the additional radiation that's coming from the Fashika nuclear power plant, you know, because those currents, the trade currents, are coming up from Japan, up around Alaska, and starts heading down the northern part of California. That's the way the currents are. So much like the Gulf Stream we have here on the East Coast, it's the same thing over there. And the problem is they've got a disaster there. They aren't saying anything. They aren't making anything public because they don't know how to cure it. They don't know how to stop it. There is no plan. That's a problem.
That's quite true. Well, we do have some conversation going on in the chat. We have a guest whose name is Soul Connection, who's I'll just give you their commentary here. People who say climate change and global warming are not real believe most of them are just sitting at home in their nice little living room and dreaming up things to make them feel more comfortable. They are not out in the soil and the plants daily. This is somebody who has been an organic urban vegetable gardening business and worked with hand in hand with soil and seeing right. what it's done to the insect community and a keen observer of nature, plants, bees, birds, temperatures, microclimates, and spread across in many states for four decades with direct firsthand continual experiences. And they're saying, you know, climate change is here. It's making its shifts in the signature of the whole planet and the people and the life on it.
That's a very good comment. Whenever I run along with someone like that, I just basically refer to it as that is just embracing wanted ignorance. The facts and the truth are out there. They're blatantly in front of you. They put blinders on and say, la, 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 life is good, you know. Click your heels and say, no place like home or something. You're talking about the Pollyanna Alice in denial. That's it. That was a very good comment from that person.
And two, this is somebody who's got organic gardens going, and they're also protecting bee communities in those gardens, which we need people doing that. And kudos to you, SC, for being out there and providing that. There's just way too much. Way too much. So where do we begin? We begin by people waking up and saying there's a problem and letting the government know and the people who support the government that there's no way we're going to allow it to go on. And how do you do that? Well, the best tools we have is that, let me cover them for a moment here, guys. Is basically to use the tools we have at hand right now, or what's the other way to get it done?
Well, I think, we're really hitting it on all fronts. We have, those who are blogging, and I write about it from the scientific aspect on my site, Minds and Times of F. Wayne Johnson. We have the Blog Talk Radio here, like we're doing right now. That's another good viable option.
Besides people, once people start waking up, I mean, a lot more people are going to be aware of things now or say what is actually going on. If there's hundreds of thousands of people filling the streets in one day, are people going to start looking for the information and sharing it with their community? Well, people talk. And if they're afraid, they talk even more. What happens when they listen to a politician saying, like a guy from Kentucky who's going to stand up and mealy mouth his way through a speech saying that there is no such thing as global warming, and yet there's people marching all over the planet saying there is. What's the next turn in the road? You know, how do we address that situation? Are the old rules going to have any matter because of where we're at right now? We're past crisis. We're in deep crisis right now.
Yes, I agree. Deep crisis is that's the way to describe this. The only other thing I can suggest is get involved locally, politically. Look for candidates who say, yeah, my opponent here is spouting out bull crap. I know the truth. And if you can send me and get me into the positions of power, I will do everything I can to start making things happen. Again, it's like Bernie Sanders says, we got to get the money out of politics. Because really, that's all that they're spouting out, is they're just representing the corporate tax dollars as being so heavily contributed to. And my favorite target is the Republican Party. Nobody's got clean hands, but I think the most grungiest hands right now are the Republicans. And I'm coming from a viewpoint that I am a Republican. I have worked within the Republican Party, and I have, in the last 20 years, last three decades, I'll just say, I have seen the slow progression of just bought out corruption by corporations. That's what I was fighting against, and that's what I'm really kind of fighting against now, especially like with the teabaggers and all those others. They were second-place lemmings.
Well, Wayne, there's no difference between Republican or Democrat anymore. They're all bought and paid for.
Nobody's got clean hands, but right now the grungiest hands, in my opinion, are definitely the Republicans. I mean, they're so blatantly and obvious, and I mean, they don't even bother trying to hide it anymore. I like to say is work within, if you can start a third party, problem a lot of times is you end up splitting the vote of your values are with maybe the party, an established party that has tries to have the same values as you have. Try to work within the established party.
That's the peacemaker's way of doing it. But I know a lot of people who've devoted a lot of serious time to working towards solutions to this and have run up against brick walls in every phase. It's just like you're talking about the fellow standing in front of Congress last week. Well, I know people who actually took part in the parade today, the march in New York, who are basically saying, hey, it's, you know, all this talk and no action. And I'm quoting a dear friend who's absolutely up against a wall with it. It's like we've got to change it, but all this talk is getting us nowhere. What's the next step?
Well,
you know?
Now that is the $50 question.
There's a lot of good people out there, Wayne, that are feeling the same way.
Right.
You know, and how do you address that? What are the solutions? I'm on board with you. I really do think that bringing the knowledge to the social consciousness, bringing the information out there, keeping it going, and having a consistency with it is a big part of it. And the only thing we have are the social networks to do it with, and a platform such as this. And there's a lot of really great little shows that are out there that reach core audiences, and those core audiences go out and they spread the word. But it still isn't. It isn't working on the deep crisis of the moment. And that's where people who are very educated to what's going on out there and know what, as a friend of mine says, what time it is. These people are having a really hard time sitting back and listening to, of course, Naomi Klein is absolutely right. But how do you do it by just, you know, the solutions offered are not going to work because the end game that the 1% and the politicians run around all of this is not happening. So my point is that these folks are going to start, and we have a caller from New York. These folks are suggesting the pitchforks and the hammer handles. Actually, I think that's the end game there. But 212-864-5161.
It's me. It's me.
Hey there. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. Fine. It's just I fell asleep on the couch and now everybody's getting back from the march and every time I turn around my doorbell's ringing. So, but here I am.
Well, we're glad to have
you. Joined us. And for those listening in, this is P.E. Nolan, Tricia. Part of the Roundtree 7 blog and Menopausal Stoners. And you were with labor and the unions today out there in the march, weren't you?
I think so. You know, it was kind of hard to tell where, I mean, once we got there, you know, people just started lining up. And so I was with Yes to WWP, and also International Action Center, some of the kids from Fight Imperialism, Stand Together, FIST. These are all organizations that share space at the Solidarity Center, which is a office space downtown on 23rd Street, and People's Power is People's Power Assembly, social justice organizations, definitely with a emphasis on workers. That's what I would call that.
Very good, very good.
Well, I want to give you a voice here, Trish, because I know that you were up against it, and I was just talking about people who are like up against the brick wall. They've had it with the yap yap yap, the talk talk talk. And I want to give you that microphone right now. Tell me about your frustration, because you know I know you're very close to it. There's a lot of activism around you with Pinko next to you there, and please.
Well, I think that, you know, it's tricky because especially when you look at what has been going on for the last, I don't know, I mean, like I'm remembering gas lines and Jimmy Carter in the 70s saying we needed to change our ways, you know, back then.
Right.
And, you know, we never did as a country. And people talk, you know, like, for example, just I mean, everybody, especially around climate change, there are so many people with such so many points of entry, so that you've got the fossil fuel, which I think everybody's pointing out, but that you've got the fact of people against fracking, you've got people who are interested in the way that corporate farming destroys the earth, you've got more people that think we should all go vegan and just, you know, but if we just can skip recycle and maybe not eat a hamburger, because I mean, like, I understand what kind of land and resource commitment goes into making some of the things we eat, when so much of what is going on has to do with our consumers-driven lifestyle. And where I was coming from with all this, with everybody, is that really capitalism is at the root of all of this stuff that is just like if every time, whether it's imperialism or whether it's this or that or the other thing, it all comes back to we're committed to consumption. And you know, we needed systemic change in order to address climate change. hold on one second. I'm switching you off to Hebert. No?
Okay.
Okay, wait. I have to hold on one second.
Okay. There you have it, Wayne. I mean, people are fed up
That's all right. It all works for me. Like I said, I'm very patient, and I definitely want to give them their voice, because what we're talking about here today is very important. And I was just thinking to myself here, reflecting a little bit, is I bet, you know, things are pretty getting at the critical stage, but I'm almost thinking that we're going to have a total collapse failure before people will finally sit up and say, okay, let's purge, you know, the corrupt politicians out, start a new party. You know, we got to, you know, almost like this country did in 1776. It's like, let's start with a new piece of paper.
I hear you with that, but really, I mean, when you start thinking about rising sea levels, collapsing infrastructure, and all of that kind of thing, it is beyond get a new party. It is get a new way.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Getting a new way.
Like a new way, and there is the climate does provide an opportunity for lots of different people to come together, and I think that when there are 300,000 people, that's some kind of statement. I don't know if it was really on the news or not.
Matter of fact, it's been on Google News. It was on PBS. Just a little bit ago before the top of the hour, before we started on air here.
People were saying that it was showing on MSN because, you know, people have come from around the country and they're all real excited, and it's nice that they're all real excited and coming together.
What are you going to do tomorrow morning?
Well, yeah, right. And this is beyond a recycle thing. I think that... one of the points Naomi Klein has been making is that we can't wait for our politicians to do anything. And the point of today was that this is people sounding an alarm. This so old news, and I don't know why, The climate has, peak oil has passed. I mean, all of these things, and I think that when people do come together to demand justice for the third world, for example, is where I was at today. So that was like what we're chanting is, you know, that we, you know, one, you know, who are we? A little louder now. We're the ones that are demanding justice for the third world, or we want justice for the third world. But really, I keep coming back to the point that the American military puts more CO2 into the environment than anybody. And so it's really nice for people to come together and yeah about the bees and yeah about the vegans and yeah about this and yeah about that. But the American military needs to be stopped, period. You know, and they put in between the diesel fuel, the jet fuel, the bombs, and everything that they do, the United States of America, you know, our Pentagon is the greatest carbon producer in the world. Let's look at the military, and so there's my point is like, yeah, with the climate, but yeah, with the imperialistic, the bullshit going down in Gaza and in Russia and in all of these places, that it all comes down to what we as a country support with our tax dollars, whether we want to or not. Is a is the military industrial complex, and like I was telling this little vegan today, just skip chicken one day a week and the climate change is going to get better. Well, I'm sure the American military is really happy that we're going to focus on things like that, because then nobody's going to notice what the damn military is doing. And the thing about the UN is they're all about nations and nations and nations, not about people and people and people.
Right.
And we are dealing with nations that are supporting profits, that are profit-driven, and as long as all that is going on, you know, we will see a systemic collapse. And when we are looking at that, which, you know, there was a guy named Richard Duncan back in the 80s wrote about the Olduvai Gorge. It was the theory about how industrial civilization is going to start losing the ability to produce power at the rate that we consume it. And this was like he was estimating from 1930 when we all got, you know, kicked into high gear to about 2030. So whether the sea levels are rising or not, there are more things to be looking at in terms of our commitment to fossil fuels.
Well, I'm going to say, plus two, this, you know, since the W. Bush administration, and it still is going on today, we are subsidizing the oil industry because they aren't making enough money in the hundreds of billions they make. And allow me to just interject this one thought here. I live on the Delmarva Peninsula. It's the peninsula that separates the Chesapeake Bay from the ocean right there in Baltimore and Washington, D.C. Dorchester County on the shore there, the Army Corps of Engineers have come down and said, and there's a highway called Route 50 that runs right down the middle of the peninsula. And they've told the county commissioners and planning and zoning in Dorchester County, anything west of Route 50, which is you're getting up into the marshlands of the Chesapeake Bay and stuff, they said you cannot have any building permits because in the next few years here, it will be underwater. So the Army Corps of Engineers has even come down to the county, restricted building permits west of Route 50 because they know that area is going to be underwater. If that's not proof enough for anybody, I don't know what is.
Well, I got to ask you, Trish, living and commuting in New York, I understand that the sea levels are iffy around Manhattan these days, that the subways get flooded now and then. The subways
always kind of got a bad rain, would shut down a couple of lines. After Hurricane Sandy, Governor Cuomo, who is not an environmentalist, if you consider how he'd like to, you know, allow fracking all over the, you know, out by Cornell and all that were gorgeous. I mean, so it's not like he's an environmentalist, and it's not like Bloomberg is either. So all I can say is bringing the subways up to a condition, you know, improving them, securing them, doing some of the things that they were going to with the doors to prevent the flooding and to address that. I mean, they really did incorporate it into their business plan, and that we can expect more shit like happened around Hurricane Sandy. And so they put in a shit ton of money to improve that system. So I think that, you know, clearly there's money to be made in addressing the realities of climate change. Because if there weren't money to be made, Bloomberg wouldn't be doing it. And that's just the way life is. I think that we've addressed it as a city, but again, largely because this is the reality of what are you going to do? I mean, we're notoriously bitchy when the subway doesn't run here in town. But I remember after Sandy and the way the power was getting restored, plenty of people who live here were saying, like, oh, my God, this is like the Hunger Games, because here you have this neighborhood is fine, and that neighborhood is devastated, and, you know, these bitches on the, you know, Midtown don't even, you know, they're complaining because there's no fresh lettuce when people haven't had water in 2 weeks and things like that. So New York presents a interesting picture when you look at the realities that will go along with climate change. You know, I think about things like this and start thinking about, you know, drought in California, but yet at the same time you have, I believe it's Nestle pumping out the water from the underground springs and things and selling it to the residents who are in a drought area. You know, again, this is profit motive. This is, you know, capitalism at its finest, and this is what's happening. We've commodified water. We commodify, you know, everything. And, you know, you look at Detroit and what's happening there, and so... Again, you have these things that are basic human rights that are commodified in this culture, and it brings us back to, you know, in order to address climate change, we need a system change. And that's why this has been a lovely march today. People are jazzed. It's a nice pep rally. We're all having fun. There are, people talking to each other because, you know, they're glad to get out and talk to each other instead of being isolated in their homes and wherever they're talking on the buses. They rode into town, the trains, all that stuff, right? But, you know, Popular Resistance, you know, Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeese and them, we're all going over to the UN today to occupy Damrosch. I forget the name of that park, but it's across the street from the UN, and so that'll be occupied through Tuesday. Tomorrow's flooding Wall Street because, you know, that's where the problem resides. And does business.
Yeah.
So Occupy's getting Adbusters called for it, I think. A lot of organizations are supporting it, but that's 9 a.m. On Wall Street because, again, there's the issue. You know,
so
what you're
really addressing here, what you're saying is when I ask you about the problems that are already cropping up from climate change, you're saying that the already corrupt system is actually using its tools and commodifying all of the stopgaps in this to keep the corrupt system in place as climate change.
Well, yeah, and in a way, it's like greenwashing all of this, right? So you're going to still have business practice as usual. You're still going to have profits over people, but you can put a green spin on it, like, oh, we're protecting the environment or we're doing whatever because we're such good guys, you know. And they're still just seeing another business opportunity.
Question here. It's about, as you say, so in revolving commodification of all of this is basically that they're not addressing the corruptness of the system or the ethical and moral questions that are being addressed in how they're doing it.
Well, yeah, and so you can, and because it's so pervasive, this corruption where, you know, this end stage of empire, you see things like the cops in Ferguson or all over where there's this last desperate grasp of the imperialists to hang on to control. I think the Israeli government and army is a great example of desperate trying to retain control by oppressing brown people wherever possible. So we'll be seeing more of that. We're facing another winter in New York. They're saying it's going to be like it was last time. I've been seeing the reports coming in about there's no doubt. I mean, the climate has shifted. All this bean counting that's been going on has been brought to us by the Koch brothers and other people who want us to deny it and continue being like we are now, like business as usual. Keep that SUV going. And again, though, I mean, even when I say that, it's like, okay, there are these little things we as people can do to make it better, but we're only maybe 30% of the problem. It comes back to damn military.
Yeah.
You know, and we wouldn't have a military unless we were committed to industrialist capitalist policies that have to do with exploiting people and the planet, you know, from sea to shining sea.
Okay, Trish, I've got to, wait a minute, just We're at the last part of the show here, last few minutes. I got one question for you. What do you think is the solution to this problem of this corrupt system? It's the question I've been anchoring throughout the whole show. It's how do we...
What I think,
is there,
you know,
a natural phenomenon?
I believe that among people, there has been, from where I'm looking, it's like a reinterest and in revolutionary theory and what comes next. I think that the train, you know, the governmental train that we have, that's, you know, the plutocracy, is kind of like, you know, when it's the train is going to go off the trestle and down into the gorge, and there's really nothing you can do but watch the train wreck. You know,
yeah.
And that's happening. But what we do need is like, okay, so what comes next? And I'm not talking about, okay, let me go to Home Depot and get some duct tape to protect me from anthrax. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, what does the new world look like? Who are we going to be in the next step? And if we are reaching out and working together in community, then,
yeah,
you know, with the values that we say as a Christian nation, you know, taking care of each other, and this comes to, like, basic health care, basic human rights, housing, shelter, food, all these things we say we believe in. Let's really do that, at least for each other, as these bastards crumble under their weight. And if they are all in a bunker hiding from the climate change and hiding from that, good. Let's cut off their fucking air, because I am tired of those people.
Oh, come on. Tell us how you really feel.
No. Hoorah. Hoorah. I like it.
You know, I mean, really, but the solution is in us. It's not, it is outside of the box. There is not a reform in the land. There's no reform. There is the time is for revolution now. And it's not pretty. But Ferguson wasn't pretty, and that's the system that we have. And that's going on today. And it's time to resist with everything you've got. And
gotcha.
That's the only way you can look at yourself in the mirror, if you ask me.
I think it's going to take a total collapse for people to come around.
Well, I think it's coming, so I think just get ready.
Yeah,
because it's coming.
I think it's happening. Listen, Tricia, give my best to Pinko. I hear him back.
I will. I've got a house full of people that just walked in from the march, so I got to go.
Okay.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for
good
being there.
Good luck to us all. Good luck to us
bye
all.
Okay, bye-bye. God bless us, everyone. Bye-bye.
There you go. Very good, very good, Gwen.
And we are at the end of the hour, but she basically brought up what I wanted to hear. It's when you're part of the commentator on the radio side, it's better to get it from somebody else's voice. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. So, well, like I said, I knew it was going to be a total collapse, and you can try to work within the system, but, you know, like she said, it's probably just be a whole new revolution, which I kind of mentioned Thomas Jefferson of taking out a new piece of paper and let's go.
Well, it's true, and there's a lot of the old system that's going to help us keep ourselves together and sustainable locally. I actually think that local sustainability is what we should be working for and reaching out across, you know, all these networks to one another to exchange ideas in and create a new web or fabric of communication and wholeness. Beyond that, I think we're all trying to figure it out as we go.
Right. Well, very good. So it was a good show. I really enjoyed it. Jack really missed out.
We didn't get the actual progressive statement, so we will next week. I want to thank everybody for listening and joining in with us today. Wayne, thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
And give me your blog. Well, we are out. Thank you for listening. We will be back next Sunday with Here Be Monsters Monday, tomorrow, Spirit Therapy at 7 p.m. Thank you for listening.
Bye, everybody.
Wayne, thank you. You still with me here for?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah.
So, again.
And this is being recorded, so folks will hear it at the end of the show who tune in through the podcast. But my point was getting to I know pretty much what Tricia was thinking, and I have a lot of friends who think the same way, and I tend to too, although I'm not someone who would go about it in any kind of fashion of radicalness, you know what I'm saying? I'm the MLK camp, as far as that's concerned. There is revolution going on all around us, all over the world, and there's a collapse going on, don't you think?
Absolutely. Well, that's, you know, the Arab Spring alone, that was people who were fed up with the status quo. Unfortunately, whenever there's destabilization, just like with the Russian Revolution, you had, those that had high ideals, and then you had those that eventually ended up taking over, and the repression to the public and the citizens was even worse than, maybe it was about the same as what they had under the Tsar. So there's no guarantee that with revolution you're going to get what you want. I mean, you're going to get change. Change does not mean progress.
That's true. But at this point, Wayne, oh my gosh. I mean, it's so corrupt right now. And I see your point of view, too. I mean, with a total collapse, what the hell is going to happen? Yeah, I get that. I'm starting to think about the, well, you bought your ticket, you're taking your ride,
Yeah, that's right. Another good example was during the Dark Ages, when the plague wiped out most of the legions of the Roman Empire and the whole Roman society. Things fell into a barbarian kind of, marauding hordes.
I think we've been in Dark Ages. I think we're due for the Renaissance myself.
Oh, I like the Renaissance.
I don't know if you've been watching the PBS special on the Roosevelts. Have you seen that?
Oh. If you knew me at all, you know I've watched every episode.
Me too.
Yes,
and I
got to
tell you, I was struck by the parallels, I guess, hearing between what was going on in the 30s and how FDR came in. We haven't had any kind of leadership like that in a long time. I know my mom was an Eisenhower supporter. And yet, I've always been an FDR admirer because he came in and he reformed the government. And he did it in ways that were very canny. And I just thought it was an absolutely stunning theory. I thought
great respect for Franklin Delano Roosevelt because he came from wealth. He bucked even his own family members, the Republican Roosevelts, who, after Teddy had signed on to the ultra-conservatives of the Republican Party at that time. And basically, though, see, now here's what I say, working within the system. Basically, after the crash, the Republican-caused depression, just like the last one we had here in this decade, was Republican-caused depression, was they got the Democrats in, all with like-minded. You had a strong leader. He had both House. Well, good example. We have health care today because we had the Democrats had the House and the Senate and the White House.
Well, the interesting part about all that is watching, you know, we're talking about the beginnings of industrialization and remembering that the Republicans were actually the liberals. at the beginning of all of that. They were the
in the 1875 up to 1890, I would say yes. And maybe even there were some, they were more moderate, I'll go at this point, up to 1910 in that part. It was the, after that, they became Wall Street.
I got to say that I think it was the confusion of the masses to the directions, the ethics and moral values of the different parties that enabled the perfect storm that came along and was FDR. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I agreed. Oh, yes. Absolutely. Right. Go ahead.
I see a lot of parallels right now. I thought at one time that Barack Obama might be a kind of guy that would be like an FDR that would come in and just, you know, there's no reason in the world why he couldn't issue executive orders.
If the people had showed up in the polls and kept the momentum going in 2010, instead of losing the House to the Tea Party radicals, and again, that's just another cause and effect of an economic crash.
A good politician, a guy like FDR, would use that as a tool to get what he wanted and to override Congress. You know?
Well,
I mean, he did it once before. People for lessons.
Yeah. Again, this is...
I'm just looking at the parallel. I saw a lot of parallels with it. The last part of it, I've always admired Eleanor Roosevelt.
No, that's the other thing. I was talking with my wife. Of course, we talk each night on the phone. You know, good fact, we're separated. I'm out here in Columbus, and she's back on the farm in Maryland. But that's the way we stay in touch and keep our marriage going as well as we have it. And I said, you know, they can talk about Teddy and they can talk about Franklin, but the real mover and shaker, the one who really made things happen and organized it, was Eleanor. And that's what, you know, if anything that I've come out of this Ken Burns documentary on the Roosevelts was a whole newfound admiration for Eleanor Roosevelt. You're kind of blanking out over there.
Wayne, we're stuck. Yeah, we're going in and out on the network here. Thank you for being with me today. Thanks, as always.
Oh, and my pleasure, Gwen. I dearly love this. I think it's very important, and I am committed, as we all should be. So this is just another voice to go ahead and try to get the message out.
There you go. Thanks for your contribution. I really appreciate it.
Same right back at you. Good night, love.
Okay. Good night, Wayne.